Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you to the 90th episode of New World Next Week, which, of course, you can find everything at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, so very much to get into, and we'll begin with our first story. Posted to MediaMonarchy.com, nationwide presidential emergency alerts to be tested on 11-9. That's next Wednesday, November 9th. Folks may remember, and longtime viewers of The New World Next Week may remember, that we first reported this story for you back in February of this year when the story broke from the FCC. The update came in June of this year when they actually set the date of November 9th. So reading from KAKE TV, Cake TV, a nationwide emergency alert system test will take place Wednesday, November 9th. All television and radio stations will be interrupted for the test. How widespread the test will be, and will the test shut down general communications like phones and computers? Good questions. Most broadcast companies test their statewide system every month. On November 9th, there will be a nationwide test of the emergency alert system. The EAS is used by the National Weather Service along with local and state agencies. This will be the first national activation of the test. Questions and rumors have been circulating in the past few weeks about exactly what will be interrupted during the test. While television and radio communications will be interrupted, general communications throughout the country will not be affected. A local EAS test lasts 2 minutes, but the national test will last 3 minutes. The length of the test will vary from state to state, and the national EAS alert would allow the president to inform the country in case of extreme emergencies. And Cake TV ends by noting, of course, we hope the interruption will only and always be just a test. We see an amazing confluence of drills and military exercises happening worldwide on November 9th, and we can get more on that from the intelhub.com. And it's also interesting to note, as we've seen a ton of speculation and chatter, and as that article just mentioned, the questions and rumors concerning Bluebeam, PSYOPs, and drills, and space events, and military exercises, and numerology, and Obama, and Denver, and the New World Airport, all of which I, of course, find extremely fascinating and will be covering on my upcoming episode of the podcast. But, James, what is your take on all of these kind of situations, speculation or not?
Well, that's a good way of framing the question, and I'm glad you brought up all of that, those types of speculations that are happening right now around this, because certainly that's what I've been encountering when I've been researching into this, with all of the 11-9 type of stuff that's out there, including the YU-55 asteroid and the Pacific tsunami earthquake, Pacific tsunami drill that they're doing, and I saw an interesting numerology thing that reduced 11-9-2011 to 15, which somehow reduces to 555, which is now some sort of death cult number or something. I don't know. I honestly don't know which is crazier, the types of lengths that people go to try to scry something from these numbers, or the eugenics-obsessed elite who are also obsessed with this symbology and numerology. I don't know which one is crazier, but as you say, I mean, there's a lot of speculation out there, and by all means, go and look into it if you want, but I think we get enough of the doomsday predictions from people like Harold Camping. I don't think we need to start making our own, because they're almost, well, they're inevitably been proven wrong in the past, so I'm going to reserve judgment for the future. But certainly, I think one of the best takes that I read on this was also posted to the Intel Hub, where someone was basically saying this is a good chance for the government to show who's in charge, and that's exactly what this amounts to, is a sort of training and conditioning that that in an emergency it's going to be the, you know, President Obama is going to be telling you what to do, and B, that the fact they have this power and they can flex it at any time and cut into all these transmissions and, you know, and just completely take over the airwaves. That's real power in this media saturated society, and they're just showing you that they can flex it anytime they want.
And we see it come around the anniversary, and I'm a huge Orson Welles fan. We just had the 73rd anniversary of the War of the Worlds broadcast, and I've speculated, and James, I think you and I have kind of wondered as well. I guess I always am struck by the question of whether or not the mass amount of technology and the media-saturated culture, you know, that we have, on the one hand, makes me hopeful and think, oh, well, we're so much more sophisticated and have so much more media literacy that, well, we'd never fall for a War of the Worlds style event. But then the flip side is we've all been dumbed down with all of this media saturation that we'll take it all hook, line, and sinker if they tell us aliens are here, or Jesus is here, or the Mahdi is here, or God knows what is here. So again, we'll just have to wait and see, like so many other things.
That's exactly right. What do we got up for number two?
Story number two goes to allgov.com. U.S. halts payments to UNESCO over Palestine vote. Following on its warning from last week, the United States has withdrawn its funding from the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, after it voted to admit Palestine as a member. The U.S., which is responsible for more than one-fifth of UNESCO's budget, was scheduled to make a $60 million payment in November as part of its membership. If Washington goes 2 years without contributing to the UN organization, it will lose its voting rights. Officials in the State Department said they had no choice but to withhold the money because federal laws passed in 1990 and 1994 prohibit the U.S. government from financing any UN body that grants membership to a Palestinian state. UNESCO accepted Palestine after 107 countries voted in favor of admitting it as a member. The United States was one of only 14 nations to vote against Palestine. 52 abstained, another 20 didn't even show up. Emboldened by the victory, Palestinian diplomats intend to lobby 16 other UN agencies for admittance. A related update from Haaretz.com, settlement building to ramp up as punishment for UNESCO vote. Announcement is Israel's first real response to the Palestinian application for membership in the United Nations, which happened in September. One other background note, James, before I throw it right back to you. A friend of yours who you've interviewed on the Corbett Report, Aaron Franz of theageoftransitions.com, has a good background piece to get into, what is UNESCO? So, and you can learn about UNESCO, eugenics, and transhumanism. And we'll just briefly note that Sir Julian Huxley was the first ever Director General of UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. In 1946, he wrote its founding document, and this is Aldous Huxley's brother, and it was entitled UNESCO, Its Purpose and Philosophy. The overall task of the organization can be summed up in the quote, to help the emergence of a single world culture, end quote. James.
That's exactly right. He also writes about the need to make eugenics a politically viable philosophy. So absolutely right. That's the key of this whole issue, is that this is an example of America doing the right things for the wrong reasons. And I guess it doesn't really matter what the reasons are. At least they're doing the right thing in defunding UNESCO, which deserves to be defunded and taken off the face of the planet, along with the United Nations, which is, as we know, just the stepping stone towards the formation of world government. And so in some ways, this whole Palestinian issue at the UN is a way of legitimizing the international authority of this body, when really, I mean, the fact that Palestine is a state that's recognized by whatever 120 plus countries around the world is what makes it a state, not that it has a seat at the General Assembly at the UN. So that's an example of the wrong reasons and the wrong things being used to support a cause which in itself is good. I mean, we certainly want some sort of political settlement of the Palestine issue, but not through the United Nations. And we shouldn't be legitimizing the United Nations in all of this. So it's a bit confusing, and they're trying to herd us into supporting something that doesn't deserve to be supported. But at any rate, at least UNESCO is being defunded. I mean, that's a good thing, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's always important to note that, you know, the UN building in New York is, I believe, on land donated by the Rockefellers. So, of course, they have a vested interest in all of these things, and they're connected to, you know, the foundation families and all of these things that, again, on so many levels, on all of our stories, whether we're talking about food or the military or the UN or
and,
the media.
And I just want to say, don't forget, it used to be an abattoir before it was the United Nations.
That's what it was. I couldn't think of that as I was just mentioning it. It was a former slaughterhouse that where the United Nations is built in New York. Thank you.
Yeah. Donated by the Rockefellers. What a wonderful philanthropic family they are. Yeah, exactly.
That, you know, and that reminds me of all those kind of situations of, you know, all the military bases and prisons that we build on Native American burial grounds from Moundsville and my home state of West Virginia to on around the country. But James, as long as we're on the sort of geopolitical set, our third story comes from The Nation from October 21st. WikiLeaks Honduras, U.S. linked to brutal businessman. And we will jump to the bottom of this article for the heart of it. And it asks how all of these shady connections add up, and we'll lay it out for you. The U.S. embassy met at least twice with a known prominent Honduran drug trafficker, Second, it was aware that he was a backer of the recent 2009 Honduran coup and met with him as it was playing out as if he were merely a prominent businessman. Most importantly, the United States is funding and training Honduran military and police that are conducting joint operations with the security guards of a known drug trafficker to violently repress a campesino movement on behalf of Facuse's dubious claims to vast swaths of the Aguan Valley in order to support his African palm biofuels empire. So finally, my friends, current Honduran president Lobo, which you should note is Spanish or Portuguese for wolf, was in Washington, D.C. the first week of October 2011, trumpeting his commitment to defending human rights and fighting drug wars with President Obama's full blessing. In reality, both are providing cover and support for a war against impoverished campesinos to promote the economic interests of Honduras' richest and most powerful man. Now, James, for the update and the broad spectrum on this story, I hand it back to you.
Right. Well, this is a really interesting story that nexuses in with a lot of other things in that region that have been going on for years. So I know we don't have a lot of time left, so I'll just direct people over to Boiling Frogs Post, where Sibel Edmonds had an excellent article just putting all of this together recently and talking about how the U.S. now, I mean, it's the we've had leaks from the embassy there, so we now know that the U.S. State Department fully well knew and admitted that the 2009 coup in Honduras was completely illegal and unconstitutional under Honduran law, and yet, of course, Obama continued to support them, and now they're working to eradicate the drugs in Honduras with the drug lord that they admit and know is a cocaine importer to the U.S. And now there's another piece out recently just showing how Honduras is one of the main cocaine importers to the U.S. now. So so it all adds up in, you could either take the incompetence theory, man, these guys are so stupid working with the guys that they know are drug lords to eradicate the drugs, or you could draw the obvious conclusion that they want the drugs to come in. So it's just another one of those stories, and I'll direct people to Boiling Frogs to get the bigger picture.
And so, as it always works in all these levels of, we'll bring the drugs in, then arrest you for daring to do them so that we can put you in our privately run-for-profit prisons, which, again, help fund all of these, again, interlocking families and organizations. We can tie in a related update in the North American Union that shows more documentation of yet more programs where the ATF knowingly let firearms and weapons walk across the border. So we've known about Fast and Furious, and then we learned about Wide Receiver, which began under the previous puppet administration of Bush. And we see that pretty much, James, it's interesting. A lot of the recent presidents in the United States pretty much all have connections to drugs or drug running, whether that's Poppy Bush or Bill Clinton in MENA, Arkansas, or George Bush, or any of those things. So just more documentation that the State Department and other places knew about these operations, letting them go forward. So again, when they get caught, oh, look how incompetent they are, right?
Exactly right. Well, drugs are the key to wealth and power in our society and have been for an awfully long time, so people better look into the history of that. But right now, I think we're out of time. So James, thank you again.
Let me briefly, quickly mention in the remaining couple of seconds, we're going to take off next week. I'm pretty much going to be off the grid, and we'll be doing my coverage of this emergency broadcast alert on 11/9 from somewhere out in the desert, my friends. But I'll return the week after that with all of my updates, and we'll be back here on New World next week in just 2 weeks.
All right. Looking forward to it.
Thanks so much. Take care.